We have this set up, and we'll have to share it. So.
Did someone just join us?
Did someone join us on audio?
Hi, this is Rashenda, George Bettisworth.
Oh, hi, Rashenda. We are figuring out our acoustics in this room. Do you hear me talking?
I can hear you pretty good.
Pretty good? Okay. Please don't be afraid to speak up during the meeting and say, we've got a large airy room up here in the IARC building, and we're using a wireless mic system that we're passing around.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to put it kind of down here because I'll use it to kind of roll. So good.
I think with folks being at AGU, et cetera, we won't.
I know.
I want to get the sunlight, yeah.
Hi, it's Brian Himmelblum from Kodiak.
Hey, Brian.
Hi. How's the weather? Not good there, huh?
At this particular moment, it's a bit windy, but it's beautiful and sunny where we're sitting.
Okay, very good.
Lots of clouds around, though.
Are you typing, Brian?
Excuse me?
Are you typing?
Not currently, no.
No?
Sounds like somebody else.
This is Jeremy Mathis. I'm also online, but I'm not typing.
Hey, folks online, if you're typing, please mute your phone, because we hear it loud and clear. Thanks.
Yeah.
my master's son. My wife was spending the summer at Santa Barbara. It's just there, like every night, to the beach. And normally this room, like you mentioned, you know, like if someone gets in here, they'll talk about that. Because it's such a...
It's been primed with
Flint.
It's
dropped on the ground. It's a lot more.
It is.
It's a lot more.
want. There's no, regard to narrative self-assessment. Nobody wants to database that stuff.
And then if you write on this page, you can record what you've
Well, we don't need that.
That's sort of what we're saying now. And I would suggest to put it in one of the rooms that I think that we're going to need to
say, this is public, this is for faculty.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get going here. We've got a lot of people. Meeting to order. This is UAF Faculty Senate meeting number 179, and I know we've got a large number of people online, so we'll find out if we have a quorum here shortly. So let's go ahead and do a roll call. Jane?
We're using this wireless mic in the room, and there'll be kind of a delay while we're passing it around, but hopefully it'll make us all loud enough for the folks that are on audio. All right, Abramowitz?
Here. Present.
Alexia? Anyone here for Vladimir Alexia? Aaron? Here for Anthony Aaron? Bates?
Here.
Baker? Ando Pacio? Barbosa? Anybody here for Perry Barbosa? Ethan Hart?
Here.
Ethan Brown?
This is Leith Albertson. I'm the alternate for Stephen Brown.
Okay, thanks, Leith. Cascado?
Here.
David?
Here.
George Bettisworth?
Here.
Bullock?
Here.
Gustafson?
Here.
Healy?
Here.
Henry?
Here.
Himmelblum? Right, and you're online, right?
Yes, I'm here.
Westmont? Are you here for Laura?
This is Alex. I am Laura's alternate.
Thanks, Alex.
You're welcome.
Henson?
Yes.
Boston?
Here.
Jolie? Jones?
Here.
Online? Okay. Larden?
Here.
Lawley?
Here.
Mathis?
Here.
McCaffern? Diane McCaffern? Esker? Okay. Meyer? Anyone here for Franz Meyer? Moses?
Here.
Nadine? Anyone online for Elizabeth? Hey, Mary? Chung Sang?
I'm here. Brian Ransley
is here for Chung Sang.
Radenbaugh.
Radenbaugh's here.
Rennes. Reynolds.
Here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
Jang. And now we have Jordan Titus here today, is that right?
Yep.
Jordan's here today. Anyone from the registrar's office?
This is Mike. I'm here.
And is that in for staff council? Or ASUAS? I'm Ms. Paul Ware. Couldn't be here today. Is Anita Hartman online? We have Dana Thomas in the room. And is Susan coming, Dana?
Bet she was.
Okay.
All right, as Jane said, there are going to be brief moments as we pass the mic back and forth here. Do we have any changes to the minutes of meeting 178? Hearing none, let's go ahead and approve the minutes and move on to adoption of the agenda. Are there any changes people would like to make to the agenda? Nope. All right. And that takes us to the status of Chancellor's Office actions. We had nothing pending, and nothing approved. So that makes that section really short. And on to President's remarks. The primary thing I've been dealing with recently has been the listening sessions. I had gone to the one at Interior Illusions, and I've also now gone to the ones for Tama Valley campuses, or CCC now. It's going to take me a while to break that habit. And also for UAF. And the listening sessions are showing that they're very different in character. And it's very interesting as you go to the different ones, how they come across. They're being handled very well. But the Interior Illusions, we had far more stakeholder input than we did in the one for that was held last Thursday, where it was more of a session where we had more UAF folks speaking. And then the one on Friday was, again, more stakeholder. So they've got some different character in there, and they're trying very hard to separate out what is a UAF comment from what is a comment by a stakeholder so that we're not just listening to ourselves in an echo chamber, which is fairly important given that some people have gone to multiple sessions. So it's been an interesting experience to watch how everything is progressing. The ones for faculty, students, and staff, to get the interior, what do we think we're doing well, what do we think we need to do better, will be coming up next semester. If you want to jump ahead of the gang and get your input in, you can go online to the website. It is linked through the www.alaska.edu page. You can find the Shaping Alaska's Future website, and you can fill in the survey ahead of time. And if you can't make any of the listening sessions, definitely go ahead online and make sure that you put some input in. So that process is continuing on, and by the time we're done, they're talking 40 to 50 listening sessions. So this is a major effort. And that's really been the key thing I've been focused on here. Are there any questions for me? Hearing none, I'll pass it off to Jennifer.
All right, I've been working on the same topic. Kathy and I have been doing this together. There will be one more listening session for the UAS system, and that is in the Northwest campus. I believe it's next week, although I haven't looked up the date recently. That will conclude the external listening sessions for UAS. There is a tentative schedule for the internal listening sessions. They begin January 19th, and the first one for the UAS system would be January 24th if they stick with this schedule, and they'll run through February and March. The plan is to have separate sessions for faculty, for staff, and for students, probably all on the same day at each location, but not folding everyone into the same room at the same time. And does anybody have any more questions about this?
Yes. Can you explain the overall
what the overall outcome of these listening sessions is likely to be?
Right now, they're all being recorded, so there's an audio recording of them, and there are sets of notes that summarize the responses from people in the audience to the seven questions that the university is asking. Those questions are posted on the website if you'd like to see them. They're very general. They're things like, what is the university doing well? What should the university improve on? It's that level of question. And so the responses, and ideally who they're coming from, are being collated, and then committees within each MAU will look at these and sort them into themes and summarize the responses from external and the responses from internal listening sessions. And that will happen next spring. There will be committees set up inside UAF to do this for all of our campuses. The chancellor is setting up those committees. We will be able to provide input on them. There will be at least a minimum of two faculty for each committee. So we will have a voice in it. Those have not been set up yet, however. So that's why no one here has heard about those committees yet. Dana.
I think the answer to your question really is it's a new UA system strategic plan. They're calling it a strategic direction. But the president wants a handful of targets that we would like to achieve in roughly the next 5 years. And these listening sessions are supposed to help identify those.
All right, that takes us on to provost remarks. Susan?
Well, I'm going to focus on a different strategic planning exercise at the request of Brian Rogers, who isn't able to attend today because he's on travel. The University of Alaska Fairbanks needs a new strategic plan as well. We had a strategic plan 2010 that was written about 5 or 6 years ago during maybe 7 years ago now, during the service of Steve Jones as chancellor. It's since been updated with Vision 2017, but that wasn't exactly a strategic planning exercise. It's more of a visioning exercise, as the title suggests. The outcome of it has elements that we probably want to consider to be part of our new strategic plan, but it's not really structured or designed to be a strategic plan, especially in the context of the new accreditation process. The new accreditation process requires our strategic plan, our mission statement. Well, actually, I should put these in order. We need a mission statement. We need core themes and objectives and also indicators, which we have at least as far as the last accreditation cycle goes, and we need a strategic plan that aligns with those elements. So we will need to work on a strategic plan that is cognizant of the new accreditation process and of the elements we've put together to serve that new accreditation process with any modifications that we decide to do in the next 8 months or so until the new year one report for accreditation is due. Now, the chancellor is getting ready to, I believe, shortly before the Christmas break, appoint a committee. Actually, it's a committee and a series of subcommittees to carry out the strategic planning process. The membership of these is still under development. I've consulted with the leadership of the Faculty Senate about your representation, and so we're going to be working on that, but there will definitely be a lot of faculty involved in this process. And the committees are going to consist of, as we envision them now, a steering committee, a central steering committee that's going to put the pieces together and organize the effort. There's going to be six subcommittees, five oriented around the core themes, so to do planning related to each of those core themes. And then a sixth committee to plan resources and capacity, because that's an important underpinning that cuts across all of the themes. The elements of the plan as developed by the individual subcommittees are going to be integrated and put together at the steering committee level. And that's basically the outline of how this is going to be structured. Now, we've got kind of a difficulty here because, well, it's not kind of a difficulty, it is a difficulty, because statewide is developing, of course, the system strategic plan at the same time, but on a longer term. We have a report due to the accreditors in August. Statewide has indicated that they probably won't finalize their strategic directions document until the end of next academic year, approximately, although they've also basically said they want to spend as much time as it takes to do a good job, which leaves it a little bit more open-ended. Now, we don't necessarily want to end up with a strategic plan that isn't responsive to the plan that the statewide system produces at the end of their process. On the other hand, we need to produce at least a reasonable draft plan in a relatively short time frame in order to respond to the requirements of our accreditors. So what the chancellor has decided to do about that is to check in with Northwest. We're probably going to send them a letter shortly, basically asking their forbearance in terms of a response on a final strategic plan until after the statewide process is complete. So what we'll be aiming for over the next 8 months is a draft strategic plan that will have, you know, many important elements in place, but will still be a document that can be changed if we deem it appropriate after the statewide process has been completed. What we're aiming for, though, is something that we can use as a framework to begin to build what we need to do in terms of completing the next steps in our institutional accreditation process, which, of course, will be a year three report that addresses resources and capacity, as well as the year one report that we need to produce in the fall. So to wrap that up, and I know it's relatively long and complex, we are going to conduct a UAF strategic planning process over the spring semester. We hope to accomplish a lot during that period of time, but we recognize that it probably isn't going to be feasible to get the plan entirely done and in its absolutely final form and, you know, ready to be published and promulgated as our strategic plan. So what we'll have is a working document that will be communicated to the accrediting organization, and that will be looked at again as the statewide process comes to its fruition. And all of this, I think, will be fine with the accrediting organization in that when we go through a whole seven-year process, like we haven't done before, our most recent accreditation exercise was just completed in 2 years, we have to submit a total of four reports, year one, year three, year five, and the final one, right? Yeah, okay, I got that right. At each stage, it's basically expected and encouraged that we update other parts of the document, including those completed earlier, to conform to the present conditions of the institution. So basically, we'll take that opportunity and update specifically the strategic plan in year three as needed to reflect the final version of the document. So that's the plan as it stands now. I hope that a number of you will become involved with the process and contribute all your good ideas, whether you're actually on one of the committees or not. Everyone will be welcome to contribute to the plan and will be offered opportunities to review it as it develops.
Talk about program review?
I think later. I'm on the agenda later.
You're on the agenda for
program review.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Hi. Is that mic working okay back there? Thank you. So I wanted to take a moment and just remind you that as part of this process, so we've got sort of two separate processes going, but they're highly related. Strategic planning that the provost just spoke about, and then an accreditation steering committee discussing, are these the themes, objectives, and indicators that we want? Do we want to revise our definition of mission fulfillment? These kinds of things going along simultaneously. Clearly interconnected, but so far, the steering committee has been generally supportive of keeping the five themes that we've had before with one or two small revisions, I suppose. So it reminds you that the themes are educate, discover, prepare, connect, and engage. All right. So one of the comments in our evaluation report, we don't have the final. A number of people have asked me, do we have the final report? And the answer is no. Just make sure you've heard that. We got a draft report that we were allowed to respond to errors of fact. And the provost and I submitted more than 2 pages of errors of fact on that report. And so we haven't seen the final version yet. Okay? When we have, we'll make sure governance has one so that you'll all have access to it. So one of the recommendations, or I shouldn't say recommendation, one of the concerns stated in there was clarifying the difference between connect and engage. Right? And I certainly can appreciate that comment. That was a struggle for many, including myself. The chancellor talked about it to some degree with me already. So we sort of entered into that with that concern. So they saw it, and so we need to work on better distinguishing those and making their integration yet and their separation more clear. All right? So that's a challenge that we have. The other one, there's been quite a debate over the wording of the discover theme. And there's a proposal. I'll send this to Jane so it gets circulated. The proposal is to replace discover with the keyword research. And the wording would be to create new knowledge, insight, technology, or artistic or scholarly works with an emphasis on the circumpolar north and its peoples. Right. So that's the conversation. That is actually probably a generation from the very first proposal for that change. So I wanted you to hear that. I'll send that proposal again. But that's something, again, we will be seeking the Senate's comment on these, your input, guidance, et cetera, and then we'll go to the cabinet to get the idea, just much as we did last time. So those are the two things. So if you have any other input, I'm happy to have it. There's the Accreditation Steering Committee, your reps, the accreditation webpage, just control UAF homepage/accreditation. You'll be able to see who the members are there. So if you want to talk to them, that's fine. If you want to talk to me, fine. However you want to communicate. Another piece, as the provost mentioned, is we're working on a revised mission statement. Because many of you probably can't recite it, I can come close, but I still can't get it. I'll read the current one, and then I'll read a popular revised version for your consideration. And again, we would want the Senate's input on this. So the current mission statement. University of Alaska Fairbanks, the nation's northernmost land, sea, and space grant university and international research center, advances and disseminates knowledge through teaching, research, and public service with an emphasis on Alaska, the circumpolar north, and their diverse peoples. UAF, America's Arctic University, promotes academic excellence, student success, and lifelong learning. Part of the criticism is most of us can't recite it, right? Therefore, we have trouble connecting to some degree. Okay. So a current revised mission statement, again, there are many others, but this one is certainly subject to further revision or complete change. UAF emphasizes the circumpolar north and its diverse peoples in striving for excellence in teaching, research, community engagement, and preparing students for careers and leading roles in improving their villages, towns, and cities. So it's more about what we do and why we do it than who we are. That's the real change that I see from the current mission statement. Again, I'll send these out, and we'll get Jane to circulate them. With that, I'll take any comments or questions. Thank you.
All right.
With that, we're on to new business. Motion to approve the certificate in baking and pastry arts submitted by Curricular Affairs. Reiner, do you want to take that one? And would you like to come take a microphone?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
I can take this down.
You can cause all sorts of chaos.
Okay, gosh. Okay, so this looks like a new program, but it's not. Formerly, there was a culinary arts certificate which had several options in it, one of which was baking. The request was to pull that option out and make it its own certificate. All the faculty are there, all the courses are there. There's no new expenses, there's no new nothing. It's just relabeling what's already there. One of the reasons for doing this is that there's been interest expressed in getting more than one option of the certificate, which cannot be done. You can only get one certificate of a given sort, the same way you can only get one undergraduate degree in chemistry, despite the fact that several would be so valuable.
missing chemistry.
Right. So the request then is to essentially restructure the certificate program so that there will be an individual certificate in baking that will not involve anything new, will not have any new costs, and we're hoping that we can successfully take supporters and say, yes, this is really a good idea. I urge you to support this.
Any questions? No, nope, and I probably need to steal the mic back.
More back?
I'm going to
hang out
down here.
Oh, all right.
Because
we're going back and forth here,
the
next
one's off to yours. So, Rainer, I have a quick question.
Yes.
Is there intention to make more of those options separate certificates? Did they discuss that?
Essentially.
Can you repeat the question, please? For the people online, they can't hear it.
Essentially, the plan is to have two different certificates, one of which is simply culinary arts, and the other is cooking and baking. No, baking. Sorry, it was baking. Sorry. So long, mate. So there's not going to be an infinite number of culinary arts certificates in the mill.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? All of those who are opposed to this motion, please signify by saying aye. It's a long night, thank you. Take it
slowly.
You want to abstain? With that, we go ahead and pass this, move it on to the Chancellor. That brings us to the second part of new business, the motion to amend the title of the General Education Objectives and Student Learning Outcomes Motion of May 2nd, 2011, submitted by Curricular Affairs. Reiner.
This is a request for you, the current Faculty Senate, to help us clean up a mess that the previous Faculty Senate made. Here's the deal. Our intention last spring was to approve the objectives for the entire baccalaureate experience. Without going into specifics, there was a mental lapse, probably in one of those late night things, and instead the wording was BA and BS, leaving out other baccalaureate programs such as the Bachelor of Music, Bachelor of Fine Arts, Bachelor of Technology. Without actually reopening this entire can of scorpions, we'd like you to honor the intention of last spring's Faculty Senate and help us to say what we really meant to say, namely we want this applicable to the entire baccalaureate experience.
Any discussion?
Anybody opposed to this? Please say nay. Anybody abstaining? All right, then we have approved the motion to change that title and mea culpa on our part. Which brings us to new business section C, motion to revise the Curricular Affairs Committee membership in the Faculty Senate bylaws, submitted by Curricular Affairs. Reiner.
Several meetings ago, we thought it would be a marvelous idea to add an additional ex officio member to our committee, and thought we would look into the bylaws and see what kind of regulations there were with regard to this, and discovered to our horror, I believe that's the right word, that there were none. Figuring that probably we'd be better simply to, if for no other reason that a Curricular Affairs Committee of the future, God help us, or them, rather, knows that, in fact, they are encouraged to add additional ex officio members as required. We're asking your indulgence in inserting this line into the bylaws. It says, sure, Curricular Affairs can make ex officio whomever they want to, whether or not they have a felony conviction. And in fact, it's going to be useful to the committee business.
Any further discussion? All right, anyone against this? Please signify by saying nay. Any abstentions? Nothing. The motion passes. Okay, I can move to the head of the room. And the first discussion item is the program review outcome. So,
well, if you were expecting me to read out a list of all of the programs that are being recommended for deletion, I'm not going to do that. For one thing, it would take quite a while, although not that long. But secondly, it's a somewhat sensitive topic at this point, because we still are in the process of having response from programs relative to some of the issues surrounding the reasons for program deletion. But what I'm going to do now is to summarize the outcomes of the process. And perhaps the best way to frame that, maybe not the best way, but it one way to introduce that is in terms of numbers. We had over 200 programs undergo program review. There were, of those, there were a total of about 45 that were programs with relatively low enrollment and degree production. That figure of 45 encompasses most of the programs that have about 10 or fewer graduates over the course of 5 years, which then in turn would generally mean that enrollment, depending on the level of the program, of fewer than 30, 20 to 30, depending on the duration of the program. Of those approximately 45 programs, 15 were recommended for discontinuance at the chancellor's cabinet level. 7 were recommended for merger. Some of those were recommended for merger with each other, but mergers were involved in 7 of the recommendations. 14 were recommended for a probationary status, which would basically involve a relatively near-term re-review, requiring them to make certain changes, meet certain objectives, and then a relatively near-term re-review that probably will occur within 3 years, but the length of time will vary with the individual program. And then finally, 7 of them, usually based on the fact that they're a unique program that's offered almost nowhere else or perhaps nowhere else, would be identified as being continued. Now, from this point forward, what's going to go on is that there'll be a notification to those programs that aren't on the list at all for any of these statuses. that will occur before the holidays. And then continuing to follow up with the programs for which the recommendations that I've mentioned have been made. There'll be completion of that process by the end of spring semester. Some cases are shorter, some cases are longer. In some cases, the dean or the department, for example, will need to produce a plan or produce other documents in order to close out the process. So that's what the status is. If there are any questions or concerns, I'd be happy to try to address them at this time. Yes?
I was wondering if you knew how many faculty it would involve, the 15 programs recommended for deletion.
Well, the vast majority of them, well, first of all, there wouldn't be any tenured or tenure line faculty that I can identify right now that would be impacted in terms of their jobs by these deletions. Many of them are programs that are one of several offered by a department. Ways to reassign people to other duties. There are a few programs within CRCD that are staffed exclusively by adjuncts or term faculty, and it's a little less clear what might happen in that case, whether the individual would be changed to a different job within CRCD or whether they might not be continued. Thank you.
I wanted to add that I've been working with the Provost and the Dean's Council to revise the program review process, the template that the department's completed, and the evaluation form that the various committees used for completing their job, to better align those, create an example that we can post online, what one looks like, you get the idea. So that's still in process. A couple of interesting elements that came up during that conversation I want to point out. One is we're going to be asking programs what their engagement or involvement of their program with the library is, because we actually got criticized for that in our last accreditation review, and so that'll be a little small added element. And then contributions of individual programs as they relate to the individual core themes is another element that we'll probably bring in. Yes, I received several comments from department chairs already during the process last year. We've tried to incorporate those into the revisions, but if you have other ideas, your department, yourselves, your chairs, be happy to hear those, in revising this process. We'll start again next fall. We'll do about one-fifth of the programs next fall.
All right. I also want to comment that the process of program review is going to come back to the Faculty Senate in the spring for discussion. So the Faculty Senate will have another chance to speak on this and to approve or disapprove of elements of it. So please pay attention to how it's going in your own unit.
Hey, I had a question. Who will determine the ones that have all programs?
We've actually with deans. Some deans want their entire college to go all at once, so that it's a one-year thing. They don't have to spread it out over five within a college. You get the idea. So that all units get on the same page, and it's a topic of ongoing conversation at department chair meetings, for instance. Others want to break them up because of their size and do all of the specialized accreditation aligned with their evaluation visits. Some want to do those the year prior to their specialized accreditation evaluation visits. Some want to do it the year after. And so it's a negotiation, I guess, is about the best as I can explain it. Is there anything you want to add to that? It's an ongoing conversation within the Dean's Council, for sure. But we will create the outcome this year will be a list by mid-spring, I would say, We'll have a list of programs and which year they're up over the next 5 years.
Any other questions? No, that takes us to Moldy Courses. Provost Henricks again.
Yeah, I made up that Moldy course designation years ago when the first started sending the lists out, and I didn't necessarily expect it to stick the way it has, but I guess it gets the point across. So we've completed at least the assessment part of the Moldy course review, the deletions of the courses that are going to be proposed or decided to be deleted is taking a little longer, but I anticipate to have that done in spring semester, hopefully fairly early in the spring semester, have them all submitted to the Senate. There were about 940 Moldy courses on the original list sent out. Of those, 346 were identified by their deans or departments as being okay to drop completely, so that gets rid of a bunch of them all together. We also had 315 labeled as being retained but no longer published in the catalog. They might be revised at some revived at some later date. Finally, there were 280 identified as people wanting to continue to publish them in the catalog, despite the fact that they hadn't been taught in at least 3 years. About half of those are CRCD courses, the other half from Fairbanks campus. I'm going to get back to some of the units. Many of the units were very good and were quite selective about the courses that they chose to retain in the catalog, and gave me a pretty thorough justification for the ones that they wished to retain in the catalog. But there were one or two units that wanted to keep a relatively large number of courses and really didn't provide a strong rationale as what I wanted. So I'll be following up with them. I have a staff member working on creating a combined list of all of the courses, all of the Moldy courses, which I can pass on to the Senate office, and then Jane can use it to check that all of the deletions have been proposed as they should be, and we can follow up with the programs that don't submit their deletions paperwork. So I anticipate that by the end of this, in another month or two, we will have cleaned up the catalog a very great deal and also gotten rid of a lot of things that have been sitting in banner for many years without much attention to them. So I count that as a success. I hope that there will be continued attention at the department level to courses that aren't being offered. I think that these large-scale sweeps are important to follow up on things that may have been overlooked, but there were a surprising, 900-some courses, surprising number of courses on the list, and hundreds still being published in the catalog. Some of them were only contained in banner at this point. Hundreds of courses being still published in the catalog that we weren't offering and really didn't have any intention of offering. So please do encourage your departments as you can to make this a continuous review process and make to make sure that they actively review their curriculum on a regular basis so that we don't have quite so many Moldy courses. Thanks.
Any questions for Susan? Nope. Okay, then on to C, the Master's Degree Award Ceremony. Thank you for everyone who got back to me. The amazing thing was is about all the people who got back to me, and that was a very large number, actually. The consensus, except for four people, was that we keep the ceremony together. And what people really liked the most is do a hooding off the stage. Some people did say that, that of the ones that were listed, that was their preference, but they actually would really prefer to split the graduation into an undergrad part and a grad part on the same day. You do a little bit of hooding before, and then you have the main ceremony. So something along those lines. So this is directly contradictory to what the students have come back from their survey and saying, which is that they would prefer to have a separate hooding ceremony. So I think at this point, to some extent, we're going to punt to the administration and say, okay, this is what the faculty think, and now it's where you guys want to take it. There was a lot of discussion, and I appreciated a lot of people's answers. There were some really funny statements in there. You guys made my day. Any comments or questions about this at this point?
One of the questions you asked was whether people would attend under certain circumstances. So what was the response to that?
That one varied greatly, and that was a function of, it really came down to, do I have any students who are graduating? If I don't have any master's students graduating, I don't want to go. And so the number of faculty at the hooding ceremony would be much less than it would be at the graduation ceremony. But a lot of people said, yeah, I'll try to hit both if my students are graduating. And some said, nah, I will only go to the main one. Those are the prime ones I heard. Or I also heard some who said, don't really care for the overall graduation. I'll make a hooding. So we were kind of all over the map.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is that regardless of how the students feel about this, if the faculty don't go to the ceremony, it's sort of a bust. So that was why I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm. It really came down to whether or not I had a master's student. I think it's the biggest component. All right. Any other comments, questions? You guys are too quiet today. That takes us to I, incomplete grading policy. Reiner, do you want to come to the big kid table?
Yes, ma'am. As you know, we've been discussing the problem of how to get a better completion rate on incompletes and have proposed several regulations and whatnot. And figure actually what, at least initially, we ought to be pursuing is educating the faculty at large at how shorter time limits for incompletes are probably more effective in the long term than giving somebody an entire year, except under certain circumstances. One of the proposals that was made was we email people doing that, and of course everybody gets way too many emails that frequently just sort of get chucked unread. So we'd rather have you, the faculty senators, circulate in your schools, colleges, departments the word. Here we are, it's almost the end of the semester, people are going to be giving incompletes. We urge you and the other faculty members to seriously consider the shortest time practicable for completion of the incomplete as being actually the most favorable to the student concerned. Thank you.
Any questions or comments? Please spread the word. Let's try to keep students on track, and we all know what happens when you give people a maximum amount of time to complete stuff. They're going to wait till the last minute, then they will have forgotten what they were supposed to be doing. So it's in their best interest to try to get them through as quickly as possible. With that, we have hit the break point, so let's reconvene at 2 o'clock. It is currently 1:51 in this room, so come back in 9 minutes. For people in this room who are not familiar with IARC, the restrooms are one floor down. So you can take the elevator, or if you go down this long hallway on the right, there is a staircase. So let's meet back here at 2.
Yep.
In the departmental portion or in each class?
Yep.
daughter's going to take her for the first bachelor's Eric and I are working on affairs. So I saw a draft resolution on that.
It was not vetted by anyone.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
Don't panic on that one.
Everything is fine.
Thank you. Ready to sit here.
We need to do public comments first, though. Yes, there are.
Oh.
Dana Thomas wants to.
I'll let you know.
So, yeah, I'll bring it up.
We'll do it.
Okay, I don't mind bringing it back there.
I don't have any problem getting up first.
But I was amazed at how good the audio was. Clearly, there's some background, which is, this group is very good about.
So the smart students take their papers, all of the papers for this master, their first week, right? And then they knew what to do. Others, you know, would go
primarily
to the big
financial
experience
each week. Well,
there's software the plan itself has to be fixed to a computer. If that's a new plan, it has to be.
One thing I forgot to mention my earlier opportunity, so my condolences for having to speak again, is the catalog statement for each program, so the BA in mathematics, the foreign languages, BA, etc., certificates, associates, graduate programs, masters and doctorates, really are supposed to state what the intended learning outcomes are there, right? That's the expectation of our accreditors. So that's a revision for each and every program that I want to draw to your attention. Right? So it's not enough to say we prepare our students for jobs in X. It's what are they supposed to be learning that does prepare them for those jobs. Does that make sense? Okay. So you all have all the programs have assessment plans, and so you effectively will take the learning outcomes from those and paraphrase them and put them into the content for each of the programs. I just want to make sure that that expectation is there. Right? Help me share that information.
There'll also be a request disseminated formally through the deans to the department chairs to pay attention to this issue as well. But this is more of a faculty up notification that this is important as well, so that you can be ready for and encouraging people to respond in a timely way to this. This is something that the accreditors noted, that participated in our site visits noted when they wrote their report about us. And looking back on it, it's true. Something that hasn't been a focus in terms of how we've instructed people to prepare their program statements in the past. So hopefully we can get that rectified relatively quickly.
Thank you.
Anybody else who would like to speak to any public comments questions?
Hi there, this is Lael Oldmixon, and I actually just want to put in a very brief plug for the United Way. We haven't had the opportunity to make it to a faculty senate meeting, and I apologize for that, but Mark and I are working hard to get the United Way campaign wrapped up, and we're hoping that you all can take a reminder back to your areas that we are still collecting pledges, and that can be done through payroll deduction. Both Mark and I have access to pledge forms if you did not receive one or if people in your area did not receive one. And so we can be reached via email, and I believe our email addresses have been published widely, but mine is l.o@alaska.edu. We're doing really, really well with the campaign right now. Chili Cook-Off raised over $1,000. So far, faculty, staff, and students have donated over $60,000. So we'd like to keep that going. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Lael? Nope. Is there anyone else online who would like to contribute to public comments? Hearing none, with that, we're going to go to today's guest speaker, Dr. Robert Taylor. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm Barbara Taylor. I'm a faculty member in the Biology and Wildlife Department, and I have a joint appointment in the Institute of Arctic Biology. But I'm here today because I'm the director of our Office of Undergraduate Research and Scholarly Activity. And I wanted to come to Faculty Senate as a way of spreading the word on what the mission of that office is, what the purpose of that office is. And so undergraduate research, I have to start off by saying undergraduate research is nothing new at UAS. It's been going on for a very long time. There's a lot of undergraduate research that goes on. A lot of students publish papers, and in fact, I pulled this from the draft accreditation report that Dana was mentioning earlier. We were commented by the accreditation evaluators, complimented for our commitment to undergraduate research. So it's not anything that the IRSA office is going to invent or develop. However, it was recognized a few years ago that undergraduate research, as much as it goes on here, and as positive an experience it is for the students that are involved with it, is not very high profile. It's not one of the most noticeable parts of the student experience here. It's not something that they can necessarily find easily. It's often something they find on accident or by word of mouth. So in January of 2010, the provost put together an undergraduate research committee and charged them with defining undergraduate research for UAF and figuring out ways that we could promote and support and develop and increasing it here at UAF. And that was in part due, I think, due to the increasing interest in undergraduate research. There seems to be a lot more talk about it. There's a lot more research on undergraduate research. There's certainly a lot more funding out there for undergraduate research than in decades past. So it's becoming more popular. Students are asking for it more. And in 2009, the Tiger evaluation at UAF Kansas recognized it as one of the great potentials at UAF to be one of the nation's premier student-centered research universities. So
The Undergraduate Research Committee, and I served on that committee. I was not the chair of that committee. The chair was Jimmy Thorson. But we worked for about a year, and a year ago handed in our final report, where we defined undergraduate research as a collaboration in original research and or creative activity between an undergraduate student and a faculty member, leading to work which is published or presentable to scholars in the field. So we created a definition that we felt was in line with what we were seeing at other institutions. There's the National Council on Undergraduate Research, and this definition falls in line with theirs. It falls in line with our peer institutions, but it's something that we tried to phrase in a way that would make it as all-inclusive as possible for all disciplines across UAF, all the UAF campuses. And then there were three broad recommendations made in that final report. One was to create an Office of Undergraduate Research and Scholarly Activity. The second was to recognize and compensate faculty mentors, faculty members who are participating as mentors of undergraduate researchers. And the third was to develop curriculum enhancements that emphasize research and scholarly activity for undergraduates. So the IRSA office was created on July the 1st with a mission to support, develop, and institutionalize UAF's diverse and robust programs of undergraduate research and creative scholarship. And the other two parts or two main recommendations I've been tackling, one in the form of proposing revisions to the faculty annual activities report. So I propose to include the reporting of undergraduate mentoring in a designated section on mentoring. This is done just as part of meeting that recommendation to see that faculty mentors receive recognition and credit for that activity. So it's to me was the first place to start in terms of creating that recognition and credit to get it formally reported on the annual activities report. So that proposal is out there. We shared it with the Faculty Affairs Committee. I think it's been shared with the rest of you, and I think there'll be a motion coming in the near future about that. And the other task or answer rising to the call of those recommendations is that I've proposed some new courses. And the proposals for these courses also will be coming before your committee sometime over the spring semester, I believe. So undergraduate research already exists in our UAF curriculum. There are many departments that have courses numbered 488, and that's typically the course number used for undergraduate research courses, where students come together, they receive some instruction about how to locate a mentor and what to expected of them in terms of developing a semester-long project of undergraduate research, but then they sort of get billeted out with mentors within the department, and they come together again at the end of the semester and present posters on their work or talks on their work. Physics 488, chemistry 488, those are ones that I'm familiar with. There are a number of these language courses that also have 488. But for those departments that don't have or aren't able to currently offer 488, I've created the IRSA 388 and the IRSA 488. So those numbers are the numbers that propose them to be called. Ultimately, they get assigned whatever number is most appropriate. appropriate. They ran this past semester as 93, so 393 and 493, and they're also being offered this current semester as 393 and 493. In addition to that, I have proposed two seminar courses, 192 and 492. 192, these are one credit pass-fail seminar courses. 192 is intended to be a showcase of research that's going on at UAS that students might be able to get involved in. And it's actually been a really wonderful semester for me to learn about all the really cool things that students get involved in. Be an undergraduate again. There was particularly documentary filmmaking. We had one of the professors from the journalism department come and talk about documentary filmmaking, and he has lots of opportunities for students, and it sounds really interesting. So it's been very enjoyable for me to learn about all the opportunities, and I hope that that will catch on. Ideally, if it could cease to be a course, and just be a showcase of what research is going on at UAS. That would be great. It would be great not to charge students tuition for it. ERSA 492 is a seminar course for students to present in front of and be the audience for their peers who are engaged in undergraduate research. An important part of research and scholarly activity is the presentation aspect of it, and I wanted to make sure that as a complement to the 300 and 400 level undergraduate research courses, there was a designated place where students could get that process. So those are four ERSA courses that we proposed, and as I said, the proposal for your committee. In addition to that, the curators at the University of Alaska Museum of the North got excited when they heard about undergraduate research. A number of them have colleagues, curators at museums elsewhere that are running museum research apprenticeship programs, and they wanted to create something similar here, and they thought a natural home for that was under the ERSA umbrella because it's very clearly in one particular department. So I also worked with them, and they have put in two courses, MRAP apprenticeship program. That's a small P program. It's not a program. Non-academic program. So 288, 488 are the two courses that they have proposed. So I just wanted to come today and give you an update, really. I imagine that many of you have read the final report of the Undergraduate Research Committee or at least heard about what suggestions were there. So the ERSA office was created, and I got the position as director, which I'm very excited about, and started working on the recommendations. But really, if we're going to raise the profile and raise the success and benefit of undergraduate research here at UAF, it needs to be an undertaking that we all share in. So I would welcome any comments, any suggestions about what some of the priorities of the office might be in terms of where to focus efforts. This is really a UAF-wide push towards institutionalizing, promoting, and supporting undergraduate research. So it should be my ideas or the ideas of a committee that met for a year but finished up their final report a year ago. So are there donors?
are still with us. Great to see your office to do it, and you're doing it to some extent already, is to make resources available for undergrads who want to do research, because a lot of times if they can apply for a little grant and get some funds to support their work, it's really beneficial to them, and it really makes them feel like they're gaining these accomplishments. But right now, although you have at least one, two competitions, now they're not very well advertised, so if you have access to funds to do that, and you could make it a little bit more prominent and available, I think that would be very helpful.
Do you have any suggestions as to where one advertises to be most effective, or does anyone?
On the website, really. The last time that I looked at Pleasant, there was an email that came around saying the competition is open, but there wasn't anything on the website, and I think maybe posting some on Facebook too.
So one thought I had about that with respect to Tony's question is the Center for Global Change also does funding for both graduate and undergraduate research. And it sort of seems like the two groups could leverage off of each other nicely in terms of trying to help the word get out. And then the actual comment that I wanted to make was, or concern that I wanted to raise is the various courses that you're proposing, if students take those, I hate to ask this, but how does the tuition get credited?
How does the tuition get credited?
Right.
Yeah, they pay.
Yeah.
Like any other course.
Right. There's a tuition distribution he's asking about.
Correct.
Which department?
Yeah. What name is that?
Well, if a physics or chemistry or Japanese, I think, says 488. I don't know. There are four language courses that take. But if one of those students came and signed up for an IRSA course, we would say, no, your department has that. Ideally, every department will develop the 488 courses, and the IRSA course code will disappear altogether. But right now, the tuition recovery is going to IRSA, so we can afford to do better advertising, perhaps. Although, did you mean the IRSA website, Tony, or?
Yeah, the IRSA website.
Because it was on the IRSA website, but perhaps I need some serious schooling on how to make a website, you know,
I had a student,
navigable.
I had a
where,
student who was applying for it, and I thought, oh, I'll go to IRSA and look up and see the directions, and I couldn't find anything. Ask my email and find where the announcement had come out, but it seems like it would be good to have it on your website, especially if you're advertising
it. Yeah. So it was, but I guess I didn't make it easy enough to find, and we are in the process of hiring an administrative coordinator for the IRSA office, and so hopefully that person will be able to take over that duty and eclipse my efforts.
Two questions. I'll just ask them in sequence and you can answer. One of them is that in our department we have X98 classes that we're calling undergraduate research, and so I would love some clarification as to what the difference is between the 88 and 98 classes. Also, we're in the fine arts, and I really appreciate that creative activity is listed throughout here, but I'm curious about the courses that you are offering there. Are these kind of one-section courses that are really about kind of researching in that kind of research but not exactly creative activity way, or is it your intention to offer these IRSA courses in a sort of broader-based way that would include presentation in the public sphere aside from something like these kind of peer presentations which would be more relevant to the sciences?
So, your first question about 98, there are also 97, which are individual studies. And in my department, biology, that's where a lot of individual research gets done, actually under 497. But either 497s or 498s could be an individual project. The difference between the 98 and the 88 is that you cannot put in the catalog of course descriptions of a 98 because it's individual. But for an 88, you can put it in that you bring these, and this gets into the answer to your second question. You can describe that the way the 88 course operates is all enrolled students meet a few times at the beginning of the semester and discuss what their interests are, get suggestions of both which faculty members they should speak to in terms of finding a mentor for themselves, and are given a little bit of direction about how the presentation is going to be made. Right now, it's set up as a poster presentation at Research Day, and the fine arts students do take part in that, but I do agree that it would be appropriate for us to expand the presentation at Research Day so that it could include some of these performance projects, but that is something that, I hope that you'll provide us input on how we can best accomplish that, because I don't know. I'll make it my business to find out, but I don't know right now.
Barbara, I'm surprised to hear you say that students can enroll in the undergraduate research course without already having identified a mentor. Can you tell me how well that has been working? Maybe I'll be surprised.
It's always worked very well for the chemistry course. And I would have to say that about half of the students, since I'm here, I'm close enough, right? About half of the students that sign up for those courses do have a mentor in mind already. Those that don't, we discuss what their major is and who they might approach to be their mentor. And it doesn't take a lot of conversation. I mean, I've helped some fine arts students get squared away with a mentor for next semester already. You know, it's certainly not my area of expertise. That said, I'm sure that occasionally there are times when students don't find a mentor, and I really want to sit down with the people in the chemistry factory, maybe faculty, maybe I'll ask Bill Simpson what they do in those cases.
Any other comments or questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. And so if you need to get in touch with Barbara, you can find her through the URSA website. And this looks like it's saying Dana's got a comment here.
Is this working back there? David Valentine brought up the Center for Global Change funding. There are many sources of funds like that. Space Grant hands out about $200,000 in student funding every year. Many of you may have never even heard of it, that was going on. What URSA provides is a clearinghouse. So if a student comes in and says, I'm interested in undergraduate scholarly work in the following area, she can say, oh, I'm aware of these pots of money supporting that. I also have a pot of money that I can help if there's not one that addresses your area. You get the idea. So it really is that clearinghouse role. CLA has a pot of money that for undergraduate research. So there's a whole collection of them out there. And so just having a place where an undergraduate can go and say, I'm interested in X, how do I get started? This is really one of the key functions of that office. Of course, connecting them to mentors is another major piece.
The funnest one so far, is that a word, funnest? there was a fine art student who does animation of large marine mammals, well, actually whale sharks. Her fine arts project is doing animation of whale sharks swimming, and she wanted to know if there was anyone that worked on whale sharks or that, you know, she could get any kind of experience with marine mammal swimming. And, you know, so I asked around my colleagues in School of Fisheries and Oceans and actually found someone in engineering who works on fluid dynamics and movement of things through fluids, so we're trying to get perfect up to that. So I think the interdisciplinary aspect that this might bring, as, you know, being a clearinghouse that's centralized, opens up a lot more opportunities for interdisciplinary research, and I think that could be quite an interesting.
Any other questions or comments for Barbara? Nope, then thank you. And a quick question for the people in the room here. How many people would like some lights on? Please put your hand up. Okay, we'll get some lights on here. It's gotten a little dark. That brings us to governance reports. Do we have anyone here from staff council? Nope, hearing none. Do we have anyone from ASUAF online? Nope. We've got a line going up here, so it's a little loud. Just to double check, no one from staff council or ASUAF is on the line, are they? Nope, that takes us to United Academics. Jordan?
Two things. The first is that Dabu Mizra, who is currently the UAF Organizational Vice President, is going on sabbatical leave next semester. The Executive Board has affirmed Melanie Arthur as an interim Organizational Vice President, and she's a colleague of mine in sociology. Her schedule will allow her to actually attend the Senate meetings. And so this will be my last Senate meeting. I do want to thank you all for creating this position, the non-voting United Academics seat here. I think it's a really important and useful way for communication back and forth between the union and the Senate. You won't get rid of a sociologist. Melanie's a sociologist, so you'll still have some pesky person at the table. The other thing I have is the announcement. There's a faculty appreciation event Wednesday, December 14th, from 3:30 to 5:30 in the Alumni Lounge in Constitution Hall. It's a drop-in. Come by, finger food, I believe.
Questions for Jordan? Hearing none, thank you, Jordan. And thank you for coming and giving us updates. We've appreciated that. And on to Jane Weber for UAFT.
Oh, I just wanted to report on the Joint Healthcare Committee. All the board and university meetings are part of that, and we just met last week with Blue Cross about their medical services, and we had a presentation by the patient care advocacy program, and this is an advocacy and cost transparency service. And it actually sounds like it might be a really good idea. What they do is they help people navigate the healthcare system so they can become better healthcare consumers. And one thing that sounded really good is they help people resolve a billing or claim, and they help you figure out about your copays and deductibles. I mean, it's all getting more and more confusing as far as that connection. So that sounds like a good thing. So that's something that might be coming up. And they'll also ask for
pharmacy benefit question. So all these things sound like something that people might be really interested in, so that might be part of our health care plan starting next year. So that's it. Thanks.
All right. I've been given a note that the person in charge, so staff council president Pipsvizi, turned in a written staff council report. It's on the website on the meetings page. So if you want to see what our colleagues from staff council are up to, I recommend you go to the webpage. They're dealing with healthcare and policy and array and a bunch of other important things, including the tuition waiver, staff compensation, the listening sessions, policy and reg, and they're undergoing their staff council elections right now. So that's the, you know, 2-second summary of what's on the page. There's more detail if you go ahead and look there. And with that, this takes us to members' comments, questions, announcement, committee reports. So any volunteers to lead off? Anything interesting we need to know? Any comments, et cetera, from various committees?
Actually, I have 2 little items. One is from GAC, and this is it's actually brought up by the CNSM dean. So Dean Lehrer points out that you don't actually have to, if a graduate student doesn't have to file a graduate student advisory committee they don't have to have their plan, their progress report attached to it. They don't have to have a plan attached to their graduate student report of advisory committee. And he feels like it would make more sense if every student, every graduate student, just always had the same requirements on the annual report of graduate student advisory committee. Yeah, I don't know how many. It seems like I'm pretty sure in my department we weren't doing it at all, which is really silly. And in fact, if you get your students the first year, at the moment, the students don't actually have anything to attach to the report, so there's not a whole lot of students to support. If the students are graduated, then there's sort of no meat to the thing ever. At the moment, the requirements are kind of odd that first year students don't have to actually attach a research progress report. If you're after your first year and you're still a graduate student, then you need to attach a research progress report. If you're within 2 years of the time limit to get out, which I believe is 7 years for a graduate program, you have to include a schedule showing when the remaining requirements will be met. And Dean Lehrer, it would make sense to just make that. I mean, if you've been here a year, you should probably know what courses you're going to have to take and what your plan is to get out. So just a FYI on this discussion out there. So if anybody has any complaints, it seems like it would be more work for FACT members, but I think it's valuable work. There's a concrete policy, but to just make all students, all graduate students, essentially submit a really brief research progress report and have some sort of plan showing when they're going to finish their degree. And this is already the requirement for certain students at certain times, but this is just good for everybody, which might actually be restricted. That's one item, and you'll be able to run this at some point. The other item is electronic annual activities reports. So there's what I think was essentially a major disaster with this about 5 years ago, where we hired an external company to come in, and they made a really difficult to use web interface where you had to click a total of 500 fields to fill out your annual activities report, which seems ridiculous to me. So you know, I'm in computer science, and I'm actually just purely here for this is just for technical reasons. I've got this idea that I should be able to take the .doc file, right? Everybody fills up their annual activities report, filling in tables in the .doc file. I can actually convert that to HTML and parse it into a machine-readable format. So I could actually just take that and stock that directly to the database. There's stuff in there that you wouldn't want in the database, right? And the students that have graduated, which maybe is not that bad, and the students that have not graduated, why? And there's definitely FERPA issues. Other information like your publications, hopefully you're not ashamed of and would like to have those in some publicly available format. I think this could be a really useful thing, right? If the data was available electronically, then if you wanted to ask, if you're writing up your grant proposal and you want to know how many publications or how many public service items came out of your department, came out of your college, came out of all of UAF in a particular year, just hit the drop-down on the same site where you turned in your information to be able to get that same information back out, I think would be really useful. So the annual activities report, according to the CBA, is for faculty members' performance to be evaluated, right? And it has nothing to do with the data collection requirements of the university or the desires or needs or anything. It feels like it would be nice to be able to sort of do double duty with the annual activities report and collect some of that information as long as we figure out some sane, sensible way to do it and figure out what's public and what's private about that. So that's just an ongoing thing, FYI. There's no real concrete motion on that yet.
So Orion's actually written some code that and tried it out on his own. Eric Madsen and I have been working with Faculty Affairs in part because we, for accreditation, for instance, one of our indicators is publications in the calendar year. And the way it works right now is several fold, I suppose, approaches. Actually assign somebody to go through every annual activities report and copy and paste them to create the college and school's publication list. Okay. Others will go back to individual faculty and say, I know you submitted an annual activities report. I don't want to get somebody to paste that, so just send me a separate list of yours. So double duty for faculty, right? And that's what we really want to avoid. We want to find the system so that the stuff we want to collect is faculty, so we don't get double duty, and is collected in a usable form. We're only interested in the stuff that is like, right, that we have to collect for presentation to others. So that's an ongoing conversation. Eric Madsen and I are working with Faculty Affairs Committee, and we're going to have a conversation. What out of this is reasonable to have public, what is not reasonable to have public. Certainly we have no interest in databasing the self-evaluation narratives. So you get the idea. So the best approach to that is what we're sorting out. And Orion has given us some additional options just through his own technical skills.
Any other interesting committee reports, any comments, questions? None at all? Anyone online? All right, then I'm going to make a quick announcement here in terms of our next meeting will be in February, and it is going to be a face-to-face. We'll have a reception at the Chancellor's House. And stay tuned. We will be sending you information. We are going to have a guest speaker coming, partly supported by the unions, partly by Faculty Senate, to discuss dealing with, what's the best phrase, Jennifer? I can never remember the full.
That's right. I've been corresponding with her. It's on student bullying, incivility, and aggression, particularly toward faculty. And this is by a professor at University of Alaska Anchorage. This is part of her own faculty research. She's done a nationwide survey with a very high response rate, which is extraordinary. And she will be giving a short presentation in the Faculty Senate meeting and an hour and a half seminar, which is intended for faculty. It's not closed to anyone else. On this subject, of which at least a half hour, maybe 45 minutes, will be discussion. She's held this at other universities and has some experience running these discussions. You all are urged to attend this. It should be very interesting. We are trying to hold it on lower campus at a site close to the Wood Center so that people can just walk over there. And we urge anyone traveling into Fairbanks for the face-to-face meeting to stay for the seminar and the reception at the Chancellor's residence. I know that sometimes people traveling into Fairbanks feel that they need to get back on the road and get home quickly. But consider staying this time because we'll have this special event.
And with that, I'm going to say happy holidays, everyone, and we're adjourned, and thank you for some of the shortest meetings ever.
Slowed down all the traffic around us. Really, really.